laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Stucky here for the first official episode of Degen and Juice. Here, as always, with Colin Wilson. What's going on, Colin? You're still up in Montreal?
I'm in Montreal this week again, and I'm telling you, I'm starting to fit in with the locals. I'm speaking some French. I'm eating some poutine every day. I'm having a blast.
Drinking any, one of my favorite things when I go up to Canada, most people hate this, but I love the, if you get a Bloody Mary, they use Clamato juice.
Mm-hmm, they do.
I love that. I can't find it around here. And always people are like, Clamato juice, but I love the Bloodies up there. When are you up there till?
I'm up here till tomorrow. Then I think I got some time in Texas. I got some time back at home in the Midwest, and then I'm back up here again. And man, I'm all over the place. I think it's the reason why my tagline and my Twitter has always said 35,000 feet above your head, because I'm literally flying. I fly 200 times a year, so I'm everywhere.
Where are you going to be posted up for Saturday at least?
Yeah. I'll be back at the house cool. by Saturday, and I'll have that. I think I tweeted out my entire setup. I don't know if you got a chance to see it, but it's like a projector, three TVs, a MacBook installed to a TV on the wall, the iPad set up, and then, of course, as much Grey Goose and Tito's as I can get in my bar.
We're going to have to start competing on setup, so I'll have to get mine out there, and then we're going to end up trying to one-up each other.
I saw a couple of these beat writers, like, they set up two TVs, and, like, this is my setup for the day, and I'm like, you're a national beat writer. Like, you know, I mean, you have two TVs, that's it?
Yeah, I have five tablets at any time going, and then multiple TVs, and In my new place where I'm getting set up, I'm trying to get where it's six big screens, three on top of three.
Perfect.
So we'll see. We'll have to start one upping each other on there. Before we get into some of the football, one of the things that I thought was absolutely hilarious, I don't know if you saw this, was Ted Cruz on Twitter liking the porno and then saying, blaming it on some, you know, staffer that doesn't exist. One of the funniest interviews I've ever seen.
Yeah, the best article was he fingered an intern. He fingered an intern for being the one that liked the post. I actually watched the post. It was some quality porn. So Ted picked a good one, though. I can give him credit there.
I think it was the old stepmom not getting along with the stepdaughter, and then they end up they hate each other, but then end up, you know, 5 minutes later, going a little further.
Yeah, well, it was classic stuff from college, if I remember.
And then some of the other big news today was not shocking news. Actually, probably why I wasn't shocked by Ted Cruz liking a porn tweet, but Brian Cushing being suspended for PEDs for 10 games. And if you told me yesterday, name the player that's most likely to get suspended for PEDs in the NFL, I would have said Brian Cushing.
Right. So let me ask this, because I don't know. I know in baseball, I mean, three strikes, you're out, right? I get it. But what is going on here in the NFL now that we got two strikes? Is he done if he gets hit again? I mean, what's the format here?
To be honest, I don't know. I know that back in 2010, right, was the first time that he was suspended.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's, and he was the NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. So it's 10 games for the second time. I'm not sure what it is for the third. I think that you're gone, but don't quote me on that. I'll have to look it up. But fun trivia about Brian Cushing. He's actually one of two players to ever start in four consecutive Rose Bowls, the other being Archie Griffin. Random trivia on Brian Cushing. But I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the NFL is so conservative and strict on a lot of these things. It must be something that the CBA has embedded where they, you know, were able to get a three strike and you're out policy, but maybe right. Three strikes is a full season and not full off to look into it. So anyway, before we get into college, I think the last thing that we'll wrap up is the super contest. So we had a successful week in the top 10% going 3-1-1. We had some Rivers magic to get that last push. I think this week, I'm definitely two of my favorites, which I'm not going to let you talk me out of having as part of the five are Green Bay at three, catching three, and the Giants laying three. Do you disagree on any there? And do you have one that you really like this week?
I actually agree with the Giants, you know, because it fits our whole buy low, you know, sell high, buy low, you know, because I hate the Lions just because of the four turnovers by the Cardinals. And this is what the Lions went through last year, you know, just smoke and mirrors and a bunch of bullshit winning close games. I think the Giants, and you know what? You know what's being hyped is that the Giants haven't scored over 20 points since like 1986 or some shit like that. So I want more of the media to feed that down my throat as we probably hop on the Giants bandwagon. And I can't disagree with Green Bay either. Green Bay owns Atlanta, but what happened last year, what people don't realize when they see that game last year, is that Green Bay had to go like 7-8 wins in a row just to get into the playoffs. And then they played like at negative temperatures against the Giants. And then they rode this humongous high into Cowboys Stadium, which I went to, and I was at that game with that Jared Cook catch. And so they're on this amazing 8-9 game winning streak. And because you had just played in the cold at negative degrees and you just went on the road and played the Cowboys, they showed up in Atlanta and they got their ass whooped because Aaron Rodgers had the flu. I mean, he was beat up. He was tired. His body just couldn't take it anymore. And that was for the rest of the team, too. They had just been on this frantic pace for 8 weeks. And it just, they emotionally, you don't have emotional letdowns in NFL like you do in college. But in this scenario, they had accumulated so many wins and so many big moments to get to the NFC Championship that Atlanta just ran them out the building.
Yeah, major revenge for Rodgers, you know, who's historically has owned the Falcons. And, you know, you get Rodgers as a dog, you know, catching three with revenge on prime time. I mean, that's a spot that I'm going to love regardless. And the Falcons are flawed in the trenches, something that I like to bet against as we did in week one. Hopefully we can pull out another, you know, 3-1-1 or better this week and keep the momentum going. But getting into college for this week, some housekeeping. Some of the, you know, we have more canceled games this weekend. We have FIU Indiana was canceled, Georgia Tech UCF was canceled, and then Miami Florida State was actually moved to October 7th. You know, there's been a lot of canceled games this year, and something to note, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, because we usually don't see this many canceled games, but if you bet a season win total with a team that, you know, didn't play their full schedule, that's no action no matter what. So even if you played an over five and the team, you know, wins nine games but had one canceled, that'll be no action. Is that how you're understanding as well?
That is it. That was the official thing. At least I have most of my tickets with South Point and the Rampart property out in Vegas. And so it's going to be no action, which is really sad to me because I had a lot of money on our favorite team, UTSA, meet Meep over 6.5. And, you know, they've already won as a dog against Baylor. But they had their game against Houston, which was another game I thought they were going to win. That got canceled. So now even if UTSA goes 8-3 on the season in 11 games, that over 6.5 is void. So check your tickets. And I don't think you can cash them until the end of the season. So I would just check the rules, check with your book and find out what's going on. But yeah, no action.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well. But yeah, as Colin alluded to, check with your books because there are book specific rules. I know, for example, in tennis, some books are, you know, something has to go the full match. Some books have it just has to go one full set or two full sets. So, you know, sometimes books do have different rules. So as always, check with your books. But this actually has me thinking now. So if Illinois beats South Florida this week and then gets another win, we have to figure out a way to get one of their games canceled later in the year. Just a thought.
I mean, we need that earthquake to happen over the Memphis, St. Louis area. Maybe they'll be flooded.
So those are some of the canceled games and or move games. And let's just close out the weekday. I know we covered that on the podcast earlier this week. I ended up playing UTEP at 22.5. I'm glad I waited for it to get over 21. UTEP has some injuries that they're dealing with, which is what I think drove that number above 21, which I'm happy that it did. You know, Temple, UMass, UC, USF, Illinois, and New Mexico, Boise. Those three games I'm staying away from. Are you hitting anything, or do you have any updated info or leans since our last podcast on the 4 weekday games?
You know, I took Illinois plus 18.5 on a bet online opener for a max bet of 250. And now I wanted to fire below 17, and it was down around 16.5. And then next time I looked, I shot up again to 17, 17.5. from what I can see right now, that number is going to go back down to 17. It's going to sit till kick. So I don't think South Florida is going to be all world beaters here, but I do think that they have a small chance to cover. To me, it's a coin flip because I had the game at 16.5. I thought 18.5 had value, but I kind of want to get out of it and maybe middle it with a 2, 2.5. And there's no hurt in doing that. So when you take a position in a game, and I think that's what a lot of bettors are like, they go and they buy their ticket and they hold on to their ticket and they say, I am really hoping that this Arkansas ticket wins. But, you know, you got to think of this as an investment opportunity. And if you have a chance to get a window where there's a middle where you can possibly, I mean, because college football is crazy. There's a lot of variance. And if you have a chance to, you know, play both sides of it and have a big piece, big chunk in the middle and just kind of free roll it, you know, then you got to do it. And I don't trust Illinois, but I trust my numbers. So 18.5 was good. But at 16.5 and lower, I wouldn't mind putting a little money on South Florida and seeing if I can get this thing to land at 17 for some degenerate fun action on Thursday night.
You're overthinking this. Just play the Illinois money line. They're not obviously going to win again.
Because we're going to lose our bet. Yeah, we're going to lose our under anyway. So, yeah.
And the first four games, they're going to start off 4-0. So one of the things that I wanted to mention is most people should be familiar with your piece that comes out on Fridays, the CW9, which is nine games that you like. And then I'm going to be putting out a piece, which is the Saturday six pack, which is really looking from a situational perspective at six of the games that I really like and am playing a little heavier. So we won't really get into those games since we'll be covering them in those pieces. Just to throw out a few that we'll be covering, you know, Louisville, Clemson, Vanderbilt, Kansas State, you know, the Wyoming, Oregon game. And we like a side in each of these, you know, Oklahoma versus Tulane, you know, the letdown of Oklahoma after that Ohio State win, you know, Florida, Tennessee, Baylor, Duke, Memphis, UCLA, Pitt, Oklahoma State. There's some pretty big matchups that we're going to cover. So, you know, keep your eye out for the CW9 and then the six pack, which will come out on Saturday morning. One of the last housekeeping item that I wanted to go through were major injuries to keep in mind. So, you know, if you're looking at some of these teams, make sure that you, you know, keep your eye on the injury report. So Arizona State and Arizona, LSU are all dealing with a number of injuries at UCLA as well. Clemson in their secondary, they have some injuries at safety and corner. So keep your eye. I think both are questionable. Keep your eye there. Kansas, their two best players are probably receivers. Both of them are questionable if you were contemplating betting Kansas for whatever reason. God bless you. And, you know, Purdue in their secondary has some issues. But the most interesting injury, and I guess I should say the most unfortunate injury situation from a timing perspective is Oregon State. So Oregon State, they play, you know, Wazoo this week in their air raid offense, and they're playing Luke Falk, who did get benched last week after setting the school record for passing yards. He will play and start this week. So you're going to have an angry Luke Falk. The Oregon State last week lost both of their starting cornerbacks, including Xavier Crawford, who's probably their best player. Both are out this week, and their starting safety is out in the first half for a targeting call. So you have I think at one corner spot, they're playing a converted running back. They're going to need a freshman at the other, and then they're not going to have their safety in the first half. I think that number took off once, you know, those injuries and, you know, were announced. But that's just a nightmare situation to lose both of your starting cornerbacks, and one of which is your leader on defense the week you play, you know, Washington State.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that number's open somewhere around below 17. It's up at 21 right now. So, you know, the total also, it's got some overaction. It's got up to 65.5. So, you know, no play for me, but at the same time, it's hard to ignore those kinds of injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I can't. Washington State, if they want to, they could put up 50, 60 themselves on this secondary, which is just completely depleted. I mean, Minnesota took advantage after. I mean, Minnesota put up 48 last week. Oh, man, I bet Oregon State. Talk about whiff. So those, just make sure you keep an eye on some of the injuries. And one of the things that we want to make sure that we cover each week, you know, some on this podcast, and I also want to start putting out a piece on that, is to summarize each week the key injuries and, you know, as there are updates, providing the updates on sports action for all of you guys to keep an eye on. So that's clean. That's all of the housekeeping items that I wanted to get through. On this second podcast that we're recording each Wednesday night to release on Thursday, we're going to do three segments, the first of which is look ahead or look away. So this is going to be some of the biggest look ahead spots this weekend. And I want you to tell me, you know, is it worth fading this team who, you know, has a pretty bad situational spot given who they have on deck? Or, you know, should we avoid that team? So let's take a look first at Syracuse. So Syracuse is coming off a loss at home. So I don't necessarily know if you're running to, you know, if they're actually going to be looking ahead after, you know, losing to Middle Tennessee State at home. But they play Central Michigan. You know, they're 10-point favorites at home. But next week they travel to LSU. Is this a spot where you look to fade Syracuse or not?
I think this is a for me, this was a play. I hit it at 7.5 because my number made this 13. So when the Bet Online opener came out, I actually fired on 7, and Dave Mason did his best that every time I click the goddamn submit button, he jacks it up a half point or a full point. So I actually got 7.5 of Syracuse. My number makes it 12.5, and S&P Plus makes it 14. So I still think there's value in the 10 right now. I would actually caution, the higher it gets, I would, you know, play a little bit less. I would actually more look at the over because Central Michigan last week had this quarterback transfer come in and play his first game, Shane Morris. He had 5 TDs in the game. It was named like MAC Player of the Week. And all of a sudden, Central Michigan might have been a lost cause after the first week. Looks like they can put up a lot of points. So we had a total come out, I think at 65, it's up to 68. And, you know, I'm just now starting to do my totals, you know, because my totals take a little couple weeks to bake because it's a combination of yards per play, snaps per game. There's a lot of factors that go into how I figure out my totals, and everything looks like one. This could be a shootout. Now, the other thing to mention is Syracuse has a lot of injuries, and it's not going to get any better playing LSU. So I'm not sure if Dino like takes his foot off the pedal at some point in this game and just kind of plays it close. But, you know, we'll see.
Okay, fair enough. How about next, Toledo, who has Tulsa at home. They're favored, I believe, right around 9.5, 10. They're at Miami next week. Is this a spot to possibly get involved with Tulsa with the look-ahead spot, or are you looking away here?
For me, I did take this. So I did something, you know, when I'm trying to preach, I don't pound my chest about records or how far I'm up or anything like that. What I'm trying to do is make money. That's what we're all trying to do. So when I saw a Bet Online opener of 6, when I've got the game closer to 10, I fired on Toledo, and then when Tulsa got up to 10, I was happy to take Tulsa and get out and have that 4-point window with the 7, you know, the number of 7 being key. I got across that just fine. I think this is a great game. Like, if this is a bowl game, it'd be one of the number one bowl games. It'd be one of the best ones to watch. These are two extremely dynamic offenses that shows in the total that keeps on rising. Toledo's got Miami on deck, and they have to be just licking their chops to get down there and give that defense a real run for their money to see where they stand. But Tulsa, they figured it out. 66 points last week. Montgomery's got, you know, both his quarterbacks rolling now. I like Tulsa in this spot, definitely at 10 points. At the same time, there's going to be a lot of points. So I'm not sure how much value there is in 10 versus an 8 or a 9 because there's going to be a lot of points scored.
Fair enough. Here's two spots that I really like from a situational perspective that I will be on. First is the look-ahead spot is for TCU. So they just went down and beat your boys in front of your eyes. And then they're at Oak State next week. This week they play SMU. They're favored by 19. I'm getting involved with SMU here. It's at 19, so there's no rush. I'm hoping that there's some, you know, public money that pushes this up to 21. But this is a really bad spot for TCU coming off that, you know, road win. They got revenge. They were really up for that game, and then they have a trip, you know, to Stillwater next week. Any interest in SMU here?
I definitely don't have interest in TCU. I feel like I've cashed my chips with this team, and I want to get out. And I think you're going to get some help here because it seems like Kenny Hill just can't get out of his own way. He had another INT against Arkansas, and then we've got them getting down into the red zone and fumbling snaps and the center's hitting his leg on and the shotgun and just giving gift after gift after gift, and they still almost boat raced Arkansas. So, you know, I'm laying off of this. I think TCU's looking ahead. I think Patterson's looking ahead. Morris and SMU is going to try to run this as fast as, you know, make this as much up tempo as possible. But TCU may do their best to slow it down and just get out of this week with the win.
Yeah, I think it's a spot where they're flat and then they really take their foot off the pedal at the end. And Kenny Hill, he was making some, again, he was just making a lot of risky decisions last week. So, I mean, one of the most devastating parts of this weekend is that I can't fade Arkansas. They have a bye. It's really sad.
The bye is favored by 7.
Those have been my two winners each week. I feel like I've only had two winners, and they've been fading Arkansas week one and week two.
Real quick, did you see the stat that I put out on Twitter today? So I did, like, Bielema is bitching in the media about how, you know, they need to learn to finish games. So I went one calendar year back and found out he's 2-8 in the second halves. He's been outscored 190-something to 60, and he's now been shut out in the second half three straight games by Missouri, Virginia Tech, and TCU. So
is that good?
I mean everybody,
that's horrible. That's all coaching.
It is. He makes no adjustments at halftime, and it shows because you've been blown out the last three second halves you've had.
Yeah, you said that. I mean, he's one of the worst halftime adjustments coaches in NCAA, and it seems like he's pointing that out for some reason.
We'll save Texas A&M for next week. That should be fun.
The toilet bowl. I'll be on SMU. I'm hoping that I can at least get 20 there. I'm sitting at 19 now. I'm in no rush, but I will be on SMU. Another game I really like. So I've faded Arkansas successfully 2 weeks in a row. I've faded Iowa 2 weeks in a row. I pushed last week, even though, again, Iowa State should have covered. I'll be fading Iowa again. They play North Texas this week, who right now is over 3 touchdowns. So I think I'm going to have to hit that soon. It looks like it's coming down. Iowa gets an emotional overtime victory over Iowa State. Next week, they host Penn State. I mean, this is a game that I feel like they just come out, run the ball. It's an ugly Iowa win over North Texas, and then they just sit on it. Any thoughts here?
I'm not playing this game. I have two things going on here. I hate Iowa, and I hate their spot here. I think it's a pretty large – it's a large – number to cover at 21.5 with the hook the week after you play Iowa State and escape with a win, which shouldn't have happened. But, you know, PSU on deck, huge game for them next week. But on the other side, I mean, if you want to back North Texas, they're on back-to-back road travel, and I just have a thing personally about betting on art schools that are from Denton, Texas. So,
see, I'm not averse to backing the Mean Green. but I'm sure Iowa will bite me again. It feels like that's going to be one of those teams that just, I mean, to be honest, they really shouldn't have even covered against Wyoming. I mean, they turned it over 3 times. Wyoming was dropping punts, and then they shouldn't have covered against. It feels like they're going to be one of those teams that's a pest to me all year long. And then the last, I think that wraps up all the look ads. I'm curious, though, to get your thoughts on USC. You know, so USC comes out. They were a little flat against Western Michigan and a little vanilla, you know, looking ahead to Stanford. They come out and looked really strong. Do they come out a little flat here, laying 17 against Texas? What do you think of that number?
I think that number is completely overinflated, and S&P Plus agrees with me. I have this number at 14. S&P Plus has this number at 13, which, you know, the opener of 17.5, I thought, well, that's just too much. And you know, even – listen, you know, Texas defense, that's a different story for Darnold. And, you know, I think they would rather get out of this game with a 7-point win or something close than, you know, try to put up 20 or 24. I think they're just trying to get out of this and get into conference play unscathed, healthy, offensive linemen rolling, healthy defense. I think USC has no interest in this game and actually covering the number. As to where I think Texas – they are in a situation where if they lose, you're supposed to lose, so it's no big deal. And if they win, it's the shocker of the week. So they're in a, you know, there's no way they can lose this game, in my opinion.
Yeah, they should come out pretty free, and, you know, play without pressure for the first time this year. And mm-hmm. I think that you know, USC might, this game might play out a lot like that Western Michigan game, you know, where USC is sleepwalking, you know, and then turns it on late. So I would agree that there's probably value at 17.
I think what you want to look for here, and what I'm going to look at, I see I'm going to sit back because I have a USC national championship future. So I'm just going to sit back and enjoy my cocktail and watch. But I think what you need to look for is Texas explosive plays on offense. And the reason why you want to see if they could do it against a defense like USC is because we're just a couple weeks away from the Red River rivalry. And I'm not sure who's going to beat Oklahoma in the conference. You know, I think Oklahoma State, but if Texas can put together explosive plays of 20 or 30 plus yards on offense against USC's defense, there's no reason that they can get down to, you know, the neutral site game and do the same thing against Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Okay. So I think that covers a lot of these situational spots that I wanted to go over. The next segment that we'll do each week, and this will be really a quick hitting segment, is FC yes or no. So there's no lines for these games right now, but it's really just three potential, you know, very large FCS underdogs that could hold value given the fact that they're playing a team that an FBS team that is in a bad situational spot. So the first one, which I don't want to get involved with, is, which I wouldn't recommend getting involved with, is NC State. So they're playing Furman, who's 0-2, but NC State has Florida State on deck. I really have no interest in Furman, but NC State might be a little flat, although they haven't really been focused, so they might just
They haven't covered twice in a row. Yeah,
they might just come out and take out their anger on the Paladins. The other two that I wanted to mention were Samford, the Samford Bulldogs out in Homewood, Alabama, the suburbs of Birmingham. They play Georgia at home, and this is a terrible spot for Georgia. So Georgia's coming off that road win at Notre Dame, and next week they start conference play. They play Mississippi State. Well, everyone already knows about Eason, their quarterback, who's hurt. They also have a corner who's been hurt, Malcolm Parris. Michelle, their running back, is hurt. He'll probably be out. So, you know, Georgia's dealing with a lot of injuries here, you know, especially in their vaunted backfield at quarterback. They really can't afford to have another injury at quarterback. So they could, I mean, they've been known to come out flat against FCS schools. So, you know, maybe they potentially come out flat against Samford. And then if they do have a big lead, you know, and you're going to be catching a lot of points here. I'm sure they're going to take out everyone very early with conference play on deck, knowing that they have a lot of injuries, especially on offense. Samford is 2-0. One worrying aspect is that they gave up 465 yards passing to Alabama, and that's West Alabama. But they are 2-0. So maybe I think that this is the best FCS spot. I just don't know if I'm in a rush to bet Bulldogs.
Does West Alabama have a basketball? I mean, you're the basketball guy. They even have a basketball program, West Alabama? Where the hell is that?
Not that I, West Alabama, I mean, it wouldn't be D1. I mean, the you might be thinking of Western Illinois, which, you know, you don't really see. But West Alabama, I would imagine that's near, I don't even know. It's in Livingston, wherever that is. I don't know anything about Livingston, Alabama. No, but there, I would know about Livingston if they were a college basketball D1 team, but I do not. I believe they're the Tigers. So I don't know how we got on Western Alabama, but I might look at Samford depending on where this number comes out. And then the last one that I wanted to mention was the Bears of Northern Colorado. They are a D1 basketball team. They're in Greeley, which is in Northern Colorado, I think north of Denver. They catch Colorado this week. And Colorado has Washington on deck. Washington goes to Colorado. Huge game for Colorado. Northern Colorado, you know they're going to be up for this game, right? So there's probably a lot of kids who Colorado passed on. Northern Colorado was supposed to go to Florida last week, but that game got canceled. So they had a bye. They've had 2 weeks to prepare for this game. So you know they're going to be up for this. Colorado maybe comes out a little flat. And more importantly, you know, because you're going to be catching so many points in this game, is that knowing that Colorado has Washington on deck, that they're really going to sit everyone even sooner than maybe they normally would with conference play in that huge game next week. So those are three FCS schools to potentially keep in mind when those lines are released. You know, you're not going to be able to get a ton down when they are, but just keep that in mind, especially for, you know, some people that are playing $50, $100 on a game. There's nothing wrong with that. Do you have any feel on the Bears or the Bulldogs in Stanford or Northern Colorado?
I do know that Colorado themselves have a couple of disciplinary – they have a couple starters at tight end, offensive line, that are having disciplinary issues. Now, they're listed as probable, but I just wouldn't be surprised at all if they didn't play till the second half. Or I don't think this is a game that they put any kind of effort into whatsoever.
Yep, we tend to agree. And the last segment that we'll do each week on the Thursday podcast is three and out. So it's really three questions that I have for you, and then we'll kind of wrap this up with some questions that came in via Twitter that we want to answer each podcast, and then we'll sign off. I do have one for this week. But the three questions that I had for you, we'll start with buying low in college. So I know that we're big proponents of, you know, playing the market in the NFL, but also in college. So here's three teams that have been as bad as possible against the number. I want you to tell me which one I should play. The first is BYU. I've gone 0-2 on BYU. I feel like a Mormon. I just donate to BYU every weekend. So BYU, ECU, and Baylor. I mean, they've been as bad as you can be. There's been quarterback. I think there's been quarterback changes on some of those teams this week. Which one of those, if I have to, do I have? And I already played one of them in Baylor, which I mentioned on the last podcast. But which one of those do I have to play from your perspective?
You're going to have to play Baylor. From my perspective, you're going to play Baylor. And the reason is because they went to their quarterback, they went to their quarterback from last year, Zach Smith, and he's the one that they depended on after a 6-game losing streak, still making, I believe, the Cactus Bowl against Boise State. He is the one that led them to whip Boise State last year in the bowl. A new Solomon transfers in from Arizona. I was shocked when he got the starting job because he transferred in after, you know, having some. I mean, he got pulled as a starter at Arizona and he wasn't very good. He transferred in. I think maybe Matt Rhule was looking for some leadership from a guy that's probably, I think he's 23 years old, something like that. And I'm not sure what happened with Zach Smith because I know he was in camp and, you know, he was all the way up until the end of camp in the running with a new Solomon. And Anu has been so terrible. I mean, worse than he was by the time he was pulled at Arizona. So now we're going back to something more familiar, somebody that's won a bowl game before, somebody that has already displayed leadership. My problem with this, and think about the public perception right now. The public perception on Baylor is that they're horse shit. And the public perception on Duke right now is that they're a team that has been sent from God. So you cannot find a more public perception discrepancy than this game right here. Now, the problem with this is I think Duke is actually really good. I mean, they had over 100 snaps. Their quarterback, Jones, he couldn't be touched. Their defense was flying to the ball. Every time there was a tackle, there was 11 guys. There was 11 blue shirts around it. Duke is fantastic, but they have overlooked to North Carolina. I mean, they're overlooking to conference play as to where Baylor has, they have OU next week, I believe, and I just think that maybe my only question is Matt Rhule just going to lay down right here and let it be another disaster and then finally flip the switch and run the plays that are best for this team against OU when conference play starts? Or is he going to try to establish something with this quarterback change? And I think that's what I think he's going to, or else he wouldn't make the quarterback change right now. So you can't get any more perception width in a game than this one right here. So I'm taking Baylor.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, they need a spark from the quarterback position, and they need someone that can come in and throw the ball because I mean, what people are forgetting is they're depleted in the backfield. I mean, they have Hasty and Williams are both out right now, so they need a spark at that position. And I was, as you were, shocked that they went with Solomon, who just has struggled to throw the ball during his time at Arizona. So do I have to play BYU again against Wisconsin?
The number says you do because it shouldn't be up. The Mangum should not be a 5-point adjustment. You know,
yeah, he's out, right?
He's out. And you know what? Frankly, he was I still don't understand this. When Mangum took over, they were supposed to be a more dynamic offense, as in they could take shots down the field. they had zero explosive plays under Tyler Mangum. And he was never able to hit anybody down the seam, over the top. There was never an explosive play with this guy. So I'm just shocked about how bad he was. So how, you know, this quarterback behind him is, you know, I think more athletic than Mangum. So we'll see if they go to, you know, a little bit different style on offense and they do better. But, yeah, the number alone says BYU.
Yeah, one thing to keep in mind in that game is Wisconsin is dealing with some injuries on the offensive line, which could be an issue against a pretty strong BYU defensive front. And then ECU, I think they changed their quarterback as well, and they're horrendous, but they're playing Vostek with a number that dropped all the way down to 21 from 27, I believe, a soft opener. But
right.
That was an odd line move to me because that's a team they're on my list where I won't touch them all year, so you can't convince me to play them.
They, like Missouri, just fired their defensive coordinator. And I think Missouri came out and said it had nothing to do with the on-field performance, but I call horseshit there. But so East Carolina has fired their defensive coordinator, and they took their defensive line coach, and he's the one that's going to fill in. But they've said flat out, this defense was too hard to learn, and we're going to simplify things. We're going to simplify the formations and the way we line up and the blitz package. So that's fine. But, you know, Joshua Jackson and Virginia Tech, they're starting to they only scored 27 on Delaware, and I need to get into the box score as to did they just give up around the middle of the second quarter and say it's Delaware. But it's still in the back of my head that the
defense – Watch your mouth when you talk about Joe Flacco's alma mater like that.
The Hens, right? Is it the Hens?
The Blue Hens, right. Yes.
The Blue Hens, yeah.
Rich yes. Gannon also. Rich Gannon went there as well. Two of the best quarterbacks in NFL history. So yeah, go ahead.
We're just full elite here. So so I was looking at the Virginia Tech score, 27-0 against Delaware, which tells me, you know, the defense is stellar as always. East Carolina scoring points is going to be a problem in this game unless Virginia Tech just decides to take the day off. If you've ever been to what is that, Gainesville, North Carolina? There's not even an interstate that runs through the – it's not Gainesville. Greenville. I'm sorry, Greenville, North Carolina. You can't even – there's not even interstate. I think there's a Buffalo Wild Wings 5 miles away. It's a really sleepy place to go and play. So I'm not sure Virginia Tech's going to try to put up a whole bunch of points here. I don't know. They fired – like I said, East Carolina fired their defensive coordinator. Let's see if they've got anything in the tank because it can't get any worse.
Yeah, I'm not – I can't bet that team. Would they lose to James Madison by 20?
Well, James
Madison is good, but I mean, they're not as good as Tech. I mean, James Madison was in the championship game but last year in FCS, but no, I can't get involved there. And a funny story about Flacco and how he ended up at Delaware was, and I think something most people are familiar with this, but he was actually at Pitt, and he lost his job to Tyler Palko. And so he transferred to – he lost the starting the quarterback battle to Tyler Palko. So he transferred to Delaware, and then he got drafted by the Ravens. And then, you know, he went on to win a Super Bowl MVP, and is the most elite quarterback in the NFL currently. So, Tyler Palko beat him out. Okay, so that was first down of the three and out. Second down, I want to go to a conference game this week that I'm already involved in, and I want my question to you is, am I on the right side here? So I played Miss State +7. Looks like I might have got in too early, as you might be able to grab a hook. Does look like it's holding steady for now, but it looks like there's some upward movement there. But the last 3 years in this series decided by 10 total points. So Mississippi State 3 years ago won at LSU 34-29. LSU then returned the favor in Starkville and won 21-19 in Stark Vegas. And then last year at LSU, LSU won 23-20. Am I on the right side with the Bulldogs here?
I want to say yes, because my power ratings say that this should be about a 6. So when I got a 7, I was happy to pile on. Hey, it's Stark Vegas. The game is going to be a night game, 6 p.m., so there's going to be plenty of cowbell ringing. I think for me, the key matchup was the fact that Arden Key is coming back for LSU's defense, and then when I started hearing, well, he's not fully recovered, he's not in condition to play a full game, he's going to be on a limited snap count, I said, okay, well, advantage Mississippi State. And then Rashard Lawrence is who I've been keeping track of for the LSU defensive line because he's just an animal. and he was in full pads on Tuesday. And then today he was announced by Coach O that he will not be playing, that he's not physically ready. He's not fully healed. So, that's another advantage for Mississippi State. Mississippi State's defense isn't that bad either. I mean, I know Matt Canada is getting LSU rolling here, but Mississippi State's defense is something to be reckoned with. Nick Fitzgerald, in my opinion, I mean, is just one of the best quarterbacks, not just in the SEC, but in the nation. And if he's got some advantages with some holes on the LSU defense to exploit, they should be able to keep it within one score. Now, the number, took off at Westgate today. It's actually -8.5 for LSU for Westgate.
Well, Will Hill, I didn't see that. Wow.
Yeah. I'm looking at that right now. It's 8.5. Everybody else is at 7 or 7.5, and Westgate's got this 8.5 posted on them. So, I think your number is good, 7 and above. It's a side that you want to be on. LSU's going to get plenty of money, right? I mean, from the screen I'm looking at, they're getting 85% of the money. So at this point, it's just the book's kind of going to sit around these dead numbers and take in all this extra LSU money. So, for me, it doesn't matter. 7, 9.5, 9, 8, it doesn't matter. I mean, you're getting enough to cover a TD. And what I think could be, like you said, 10 points in the last 3 years. If it goes to overtime, that's a winning ticket.
Yeah, unless they lose by 8 in triple overtime.
They lose, yeah. Anyway, it's gonna come up.
Yeah, but one thing that I think that you're on the right track for is keeping an eye on the injury report, because LSU's there's question marks that just have questionable for a lot of guys, especially on that defense. So that was second down. On third down, before we sign off here, I know that I mentioned the CW9 piece. One of the games that you will have a side on for that write-up is in Purdue, Missouri. But I actually played the total, and you also touted the total in the previews on Sports Action of the over. I played over 78.5. Am I on the right side here with Purdue, Missouri over? I think both teams can get to 50, to be honest.
Yeah. Number opened up 71. It's already flown up to 78. I think that's going to keep going up. It's only getting over tickets. My projection, early projections based on, snap counts and yards per play, has this well up above over 75. So I think over is the player. It's just going to be played at a frantic pace. So keep in mind this, Missouri fired their defensive coordinator this past week because they didn't say it was job related, although, they limited South Carolina to 34 points, and it's Missouri's actual offense, the reason why they didn't, score more than 10. The tempo that they're running on offense is they want to run fast with Drew Locke. I believe I put this in my article in the CW9, but Missouri is currently snapping the ball every 18.4 seconds, which is the fastest in the nation this year, and it's the fastest in the nation if you looked at anybody last year. So every 18.4 seconds, there's a snap. Now they fired their defensive coordinator, which tells me that Barry Odom, who was the defensive coordinator here when Pinkel was still around, they're going to go to this read and react defense that they had a year ago that was an absolute dumpster fire. And so what that tells me is they're going to give up a lot of points, and Drew Locke is going to be able to snap that ball every 18.4 seconds, which means lots of points. Now, I'm taking Missouri -7 also. The Purdue injuries are something that's a part of it. Purdue has taken a step up from week 1 to week 2. But at the same time, I think Missouri is heavily undervalued on the public perception, and I think Missouri -7 is going to be – I'm comfortable with it enough for a play.
Cool. Yeah, and you'll have more of a write-up on that game from a side perspective on in the CW9 piece. And before we sign off here, a question that we did get on Twitter was from at DrewPap85. He asked, "Bachelor party." Now, Drew, I'm going to put, we're in the process of making some Sports Action gear. I'll put you on the list. I'll send you some gear for asking the question. So I'll reach out to you shortly. But he asked, "Bachelor party for Michigan State, Michigan, which I believe is on October 7th. He said, "Do we pull the trigger on ticks now or wait for a Sparty loss for a lower price?" So this is a ticket market question. Any thoughts here?
Ticket market question. So it's probably not going to be very cheap in the first place. Now, Michigan is going to come off of a bye week into that game. And in the meantime, Sparty's playing Notre Dame on the 23rd. And they should be, right now I've got it projected plus one. So Michigan State should be plus one at home hosting Notre Dame. And if you know anything about the Notre Dame Sparty, usually the underdog almost always wins. But I think I've got a really sneaking feeling that the Michigan State might not have any problem with Notre Dame in that game whatsoever. They follow that up by what I see is Michigan State minus two hosting Iowa on September 30th. Now, if Iowa gets their ass pounded in by Penn State, you know, that number might not be Sparty minus two. It might be Sparty over minus three. So I don't see them taking a loss here. I would buy the tickets now.
Is that too soon to talk about Penn State and asses pounded in?
I didn't even mean to put that together. It just flew out.
Well, I mean, so we know that Michigan will be undefeated for that game, right? They have Air Force at home, then they're at Purdue, and then they have a bye before Michigan State. So they're going to be undefeated. So the game will be really hyped if, you know, and the tickets will go up is the assumption here if Michigan State is undefeated. So the question is, do they go 2-0 versus Notre Dame and Iowa? If so, you buy the tickets now. If they don't, and you know, you might want to wait and see the best deal that you can get. So your final call is, do they win both those games or not?
They definitely win the Iowa game. I think they have a very good chance to beat Notre Dame. I have a better than a pick 'em chance to beat Notre Dame. So buy the tickets
buy now. Buy the tickets now, Drew. So yeah, and I've never been to the Big House. It's on my bucket list. Me and my boys actually we rented an RV and drove from Philly to East Lansing. One of my friend's cousins was a starting center for Michigan State, and we drove out there in an RV and just drank all weekend and went and saw Michigan State, Wisconsin. There was a Hail Mary at the end of the game that won it. I switched seats. I was in the front row on the other side where the Hail Mary was, and we had tickets on the other, and I switched sides right where the Hail Mary was. Crazy game, but never been to the the Big House. It's on my bucket list. But bye now, Drew, and thanks for sending the question. And as I said previously, keep your eye out for the CW9 on Friday and then the six-pack on Saturday. And let's win some money this weekend, and we'll catch up with all of you guys shortly. Cheers.
Peace out. With my mind on my money. Some sequins gin. Everybody got their cups, but they ain't chipped in. Now it's time to